A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sen. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 31. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about Doctor Who, The Missing Episodes. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
Doctor Who was a very well-known British science fiction series that ran from 1963 to 1989 and has been revived since then. And it featured a time traveler called the Doctor who could regenerate and change his face and change his body. And he wandered through time and space with traveling companions of various types, and many, many adventures ensued over the years. For a full and detailed discussion of Doctor Who, you can listen to British Invaders episodes 3 and 4, where we covered it in some detail.
Right, but today we're talking about the missing episodes of Doctor Who, and by that we mean episodes where there is no longer any film or video of the whole episode available. By my calculations, there are 701 episodes in the original series of Doctor Who, and at the time of recording, 108 of those are missing. This mainly affects the first two Doctors, that's the William Hartnell, the first Doctor, and Patrick Troughton, the second Doctor, both from the 1960s, and pretty much all the episodes we'll be discussing that are missing are from the 1960s, and we'll come on to some of the reasons for that in a moment. With the third Doctor, John Pertwee, there were one or two episodes where there are no colour versions available. We just have them in black and white, because obviously the third Doctor was when the series moved into colour. But for the actual episodes where we have nothing left at all, it's mainly affected the first two Doctors.
Now, just to note, when we talk about those 108 missing episodes of the 701 episodes in total, those are individual, roughly 25-minute episodes, and usually about 4 of those, or sometimes even 7 or 8 of those, would form a serial. Doctor Who originally was this serialized program, so these are 108 of the individual short episodes that are missing.
Right. Yeah, so we're talking about the individual weekly episodes that are missing. And for the reasons as to why they're missing, we have to go back really to the history of television. Before Doctor Who, television in the 1950s, which we've discussed on British Invaders before, when it was often just live to the camera and broadcast live, and there were very few recordings made. And this has come up when Brian and Xander, you've talked about Quatermass.
That's right. And at that time, they really didn't have the capability of recording direct from the video, from the camera. They could only broadcast from that, and they'd actually have to record on film of a TV monitor. So it was a little complex. So there were a lot of things that were never recorded at all. Where in the 1960s, it was a little bit different, because they now had videotape available, and they could now record directly from their cameras to video and then broadcast that video directly without having to involve film recordings and these extra complications. And the videotape at the time was this professional tape that was quite expensive. And because it was expensive, often they would actually reuse the tape. So they would record something, use it for broadcast, do all the distribution they needed to do, and then they would take that tape, wipe it, and record something else over it. That was related to the expense in these tapes at the time.
And because they were reusing the tapes, there were very few of the recordings where it were actually preserved in any format at that stage. In fact, what actually happened was they chose to transfer a few of them onto film to be preserved, and they would ask the producers of television shows for particular examples for preservation. So Verity Lambert, the original producer of Doctor Who, was actually asked which episodes should be recorded and preserved, which I think is why we have the very original first serial with Doctor Who, The Unearthly Child, and in fact we've also have the unaired pilot episode as well. And then later on, even in getting into the 70s, Terence Dix, another one of the show producers, was still being asked which episodes he would pick out to be kept on film rather than having the videos wiped and reused.
That's right. And they were doing this type of wiping, but at the same time, they were also making these film copies and sometimes video copies to distribute for foreign airings in other countries, which they were doing in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, I think the deal with the overseas rights was that they would send them copies abroad, but then once the overseas television companies had broadcast them, they were supposed to either pass them on to another country, or they were to send them back to the BBC, or even in some cases, they were actually to destroy the tapes after broadcast.
Yes, in many cases, they were scheduled to be junked. You know, they'd have these films of the episodes, and the deal was that they were supposed to broadcast them and destroy the film after the broadcast.
So we had videotapes being destroyed really all around. I mean, it wasn't just the BBC, it was other TV companies in the UK, but also TV companies in North America and elsewhere. Everybody was doing it at the time, I think.
That's right. While the BBC was junking Doctor Who and other things, you had other British companies junking things like the Avengers, and you had the Americans junking Dark Shadows, and the Canadians were junking things as well. So it was definitely common practice that things were being junked as opposed to being archived. Now, there are a few different reasons that things were being junked and were being destroyed. One of those reasons is really cultural. Television was considered to be an ephemeral medium. It was considered to be like theater. Once a play is performed in the theater, that's it. The experience is passed, and all that's left are the memories of the people who watched it. Television was considered to be much the same. You would have the initial broadcast and people would see it and remember it, but it was ephemeral. It wasn't something that would be watched again at a later date. That's just how people thought about it at the time. And it was for this reason that the BBC didn't have an official archive policy at all.
Right. The BBC also had their sort of what they thought were pragmatic reasons for destroying the recording, which were that nobody thought there'd be any point in keeping them. They didn't see any possibility of reruns, and they certainly obviously didn't foresee the sort of worldwide interest there would be in programmes like Doctor Who, and they didn't foresee the advent of videos and DVDs and the sales that they would generate. I mean, obviously, I'm sure that the BBC financial department, if they could go back in time in the TARDIS and keep these episodes, they would have done, because they could have sold them several times over since.
Of course. I don't know when the term rerun was first coined, but I suspect it was somewhat later than most of the things that we're talking about here.
Yes, I think in the 60s, most things were thought of as just one and done, and then they were not shown again.
There were also some legal reasons that they were not archiving these things and they were junking recordings of television broadcasts. The BBC, when they would hire directors and actors and producers and so on, they would contract them to do the certain program, and at the end of the recording, the BBC didn't fully own the content. They had the rights from all of the creators and actors to broadcast it a fixed number of times. So it was often they were allowed to broadcast it once, or they were allowed to broadcast it once and then have some number of foreign broadcasts, or in some cases maybe even broadcast it a second time on the BBC. But on the whole, it was a fixed number of broadcasts that they had the rights to do, so they figured that getting the rights to broadcast something again or to sell it again would just not be feasible. It would be too much work to do that. There were also apparently some actors that had contracts that required that the recordings after broadcast be junked to ensure that they wouldn't be broadcast or screened in an unauthorized way at a later date. So there were a number of reasons that things were being destroyed, and it was not just the BBC. It was basically all of the TV companies around at the time or very close to it, and it was very much based on these kinds of things.
So we've got the BBC transferring a few episodes onto film for sort of preservation for posterity as notable episodes, but pretty much everything else is being sent off around the world to overseas TV companies for broadcast, and then they're either being destroyed or they're being returned to the BBC during the late 60s and the 1970s, and they're starting to pile up at the BBC, which really don't know what to do with them. And they had problems with storage space, and they also had problems with film stock, which of course can be a fire hazard. So they were having problems knowing what to do with all this tape. And unfortunately, what they started to do was to destroy it.
They ended up destroying most of the episodes of Doctor Who that were produced in the 60s. This was, as we had said, just part of how things were being done at the time.
Yes, it was just what the BBC did. They just scrapped things. And as we said, it wasn't just Doctor Who that was affected by this. Several other key shows in British television history were also badly affected. Non-genre shows, which were very famous, Dad's Army and Z-Cars, also suffer from missing episodes. And some genre stuff that we hopefully will discuss on British Invaders in the future were affected. Things like A for Andromeda, The Avengers and Doomwatch all suffer from missing episodes as well. The destruction continued throughout the 70s with, as you say, most of the episodes from the 60s being destroyed, and it just seemed to be no way of stopping it.
I think there were actually complete copies of Doctor Who. They had everything in one form or another up until about 1972.
Right.
But by the late 70s, an awful lot of them were gone. And what happened in the late 70s? Well, in 1978, Ian Levine, who was a record producer and a fan of Doctor Who, helped to reverse the BBC's policies about it and helped establish the BBC archival policy, which was in 1978, I believe, and helped set up a climate where some of the things that were lost could be found again.
And it's, I mean, this is where it all gets quite interesting, because this is where, as we'll hear again as we talk about this, the missing episodes, this is where the fans of Doctor Who were starting to grow up, and they were getting various jobs in industries in the BBC or allied to recording and media. And they started to become, have an influence, I think, on the BBC's policy on the destruction of these shows. And as you said, in 1978, pretty much they managed to reverse BBC policy and actually point out that in several cases where they thought that they still had complete copies, they actually didn't, and that quite vital stuff was being destroyed. And so after that, really, the hunt was on for the missing episodes to be brought back to the BBC, for some way of getting them back. And it all became quite frenzied and exciting for a while.
That's right. The hunt was on and the amnesty was on, because many of these existing recordings out there, often on film in the possession of foreign broadcasters, were those films that legally by contract were supposed to be junked. They were films that had been broadcast, and after broadcast they were supposed to be destroyed, but someone kept them around in the TV station, or someone took it home and watched it from time to time. They were around somewhere. And the BBC, as I understand, basically said, okay, if you have it, we want a copy of it. It doesn't matter how it came into your hands. So there were 39 episodes that were returned, and they came, many of them, from overseas TV companies, but they also came from people's private collections and national film and TV archives. There were some quite odd things, things found in car boot sales in England, which are like garage sales, and in warehouses, and often they would find clips from other TV shows, where a TV show like Blue Peter or Points of View or some program that was doing some coverage or documentary or talking about Doctor Who would have included clips back in the 1960s broadcast. Well, some of those surviving clips have been found and reincorporated into the archives, not as complete episodes, but as partial clips.
And the other place that clips turned up was in censors, or on the cutting floor of the censors office, particularly in Australia, where a lot of the Doctor Who serials were sold to Australia. They were shown to the TV censor, who made cuts of some of the more scary and gruesome moments. And interestingly, and perhaps rather ironically, over the years, it's those clips which have survived, thanks to the censor, whereas the actual episodes they were taken from, in many cases, haven't survived.
That's right. I believe the process was that the censor would say which segments of film had to be excised, and the broadcasters would actually remove that footage, and the evidence that you needed to send to the censor to say, yes, we've cut these things out, was the actual little piece of film that was cut out. And those things had been kept on file and are available to this day.
And as you say, they also, they found complete episodes in very strange places. There were two episodes of a serial called The Daleks' Master Plan, which were apparently found in the basement of a Mormon church, which sounds terribly bizarre until you find out that actually the Mormons took the building over. It used to be a BBC building, and they found them in the basement themselves and then handed them back to the BBC. But they've been turning up everywhere. And as you say, in many cases, collectors were buying film cans at car boot sales and not really realizing for a while what they had and how rare it was.
Yes, there were film collectors out there who had this episode of Doctor Who, and they were, you know, remembered Doctor Who from childhood and would watch this from time to time and didn't know that it was something that was not in the archives.
And as you say, I think we have to give credit to the BBC and to the fans who persuaded them to come up with the amnesty. The BBC took a fairly enlightened view, as you say, which is just, you know, send us the film, we'll make a copy and we'll give it back to you, no questions asked, really, which did, I think, help in recover a lot of the stuff that we're going to be talking about.
Yes, I think it certainly did.
Remember what he said in the tracking room? Something about this old body of mine is wearing a bit thin.
So he gets himself a new one?
It's over.
What are we
going to
do?
It is the Doctor. I know it is, I think.
Unfortunately, what that does mean is that we still have some of the serials, some of the stories, which are incomplete. And we have what have become known as the orphan episodes. So we have a story that lasted 4 or 6 or even 8 episodes, but we may only have 1 or 2 of those episodes. And I think that affects about 13 or 14 of the actual serials or stories of Doctor Who.
And in addition to the orphaned episodes, there are other pieces of material that are kicking around, including the telesnaps, which are an interesting phenomenon. There were photos taken of a TV monitor of the actual episodes in order to keep a record of what was done. So rather than films and videotapes, you had this record of a TV episode that was an easy to file, simple thing to look at. And it was a freelance photographer by the name of John Cura, who was hired by the BBC and sometimes by some of the actors to take photos off screen and make these telesnaps. And in a 25-minute episode, they would actually take about 70 photos. So you have quite a bit of visual material there to see something of what this missing episode would have looked like.
And also still available, as you say, we've got some surviving clips that were shown in other programmes. So bits of Blue Peter, a very popular British children's show, clips of the Doctor Who were shown on Points of View, which was a sort of right to reply show. And then, as we've also mentioned, the Australian censor clips, including a very notable and quite spooky clip from a Doctor Who story called Fury from the Deep, which I think is the only part of that serial that survives, is the clips taken by the Australian censor.
Yes, that's right.
So there are some bits and pieces around.
And in addition, what may be the strongest resource for seeing or hearing something of the missing episodes are the audio recording. We do, in fact, have a complete set of audio recordings of every episode of Doctor Who that's been broadcast. So in this form, at least we know something of the story and the performances and what happened in the episodes that are still missing.
Right. So we're talking about these missing episodes, and we should talk about how you can watch them or experience them or listen to them in some form. So the first thing I suppose to mention is a DVD set called the Lost in Time set, which came out in 2004. And that features 18 of the orphan episodes that we've mentioned, which are episodes from stories where the complete story is not available. So we've just got 1 or maybe 2 episodes from each story. So they're on this DVD set, which is 3 DVDs.
And the Lost in Time set is actually available, at least in North America, in 3 different versions, because you can get the single disc with the William Hartnell orphaned episodes, or a 2-disc set with the Patrick Troughton orphaned episodes, or the 3-disc set with all 3 discs that covers both of the Doctors from the 1960s.
Right. I think over here in the UK, we just have the 1 set with the 3 DVDs.
It's a little harder to keep track of it here.
Right.
Now, included on those DVDs, as we said, it's these orphaned episodes, so you don't actually have complete stories for the most part. You have individual episodes that let you get a little bit here and there. Many of them are quite good, but you don't get the whole story. But there are a couple of cases on the Lost in Time set where you do get the whole story in some form. One is The Crusade, which was William Hartnell, First Doctor historical story, one of the so-called pure historicals, which had no science fiction elements other than the Doctor, the TARDIS, and his companions appearing somewhere in the past. It proceeds like a historical adventure. So you have two of the episodes are there, full in video, episodes 1 and 3. The other two episodes, 2 and 4, are only there in audio form, so you can watch and listen to the whole story, but it is a little bit hard to follow when you only have audio.
Right.
There is also The Moon Base, which was a Patrick Crichton Second Doctor story that featured the Cybermen. Also 4 episodes, with 2 of them included as full video and 2 of them audio only. So you do get those full stories there, but they really don't make it as easy to follow as one might hope, because it's just pure original audio that you have on those missing episodes.
And then also on the Lost in Time DVD set, you also get a documentary about the missing episodes, which covers some of the ground that Brian and I are talking about now, presented by 2 of the Doctor Who companion actors. And that documentary features many of the sort of orphan clips that we've been talking about, the bits that survive from Blue Peter and from the Australian Censors Office. So really, I suppose the DVD set, it's largely bits and pieces, clips and orphan episodes with a little bit of reconstruction for the audio stuff. But if you're a serious student of Doctor Who, or you're interested in this sort of stuff, it's a DVD set you'll probably want to get hold of. Although if you're a serious student, it's a DVD set you've probably already got.
That's quite true. It has lots of clips on it, both in the documentary and separately on their own. It has some footage that people had taken with home movie cameras on set. It has lots of little bits and pieces. So if you're interested in seeing bits and pieces in addition to full stories that generally you have to get elsewhere, it has a bunch of really nice things on it, for sure.
Now, another way to experience the missing stories is the audio reconstructions that are available. And the BBC has released on CDs, I think I'm right in saying, Brian, just about every missing story from the Doctor Who from the 60s is available on a CD.
I believe all of them are available.
And so what they've done is they've put the actual soundtrack recording of the episodes on the CD. And as Brian says, if it's hard in places to follow what's happening because there's no dialogue and there's just action, then they have some linking narration which helps fill in the gaps. And I think quite often, in most cases, the narration is done by one of the original actors from the serial, which helps as well. And as we say, they're all available on BBC CDs.
That's right. Some of the earliest ones that were released did the linking narration with actors who were in Doctor Who later but were not in that serial. The original tape cassette reconstruction of Evil of the Daleks, which was with Patrick Crichton, the linking narration was actually done by Tom Baker, who of course was the Doctor much later.
Right.
But the linking narration really makes these CDs or tape cassettes quite listenable, and you can really follow the story there. Unfortunately, they did not include linking narration on those audio episodes in the Lost in Time DVDs.
Which would have been a help, really.
Yes, it would. Now, we've talked about these audio recordings that they used on the Lost in Time set and these audio reconstructions for all of the incomplete Doctor Who serials. So you may be wondering where these audio recordings came from. Well, they were actually recorded off the air by fans. It was a quite popular and fairly common thing to do at one time, to record a TV show with a tape recorder in order to listen to it later. As we said, TV was considered to be like this ephemeral medium at the time. So if you wanted something to remember and to experience again, about the only thing you could do was to record it on audio. And people, often children, were recording with the old-style reel-to-reel tape recorders and holding microphones up to televisions and doing all sorts of things and getting these recordings. And there were a number of fans who had complete recordings of everything from the 60s. I believe the main ones were David Holman, Richard Landon, David Butler, and Graham Strong. And some of these recordings would have glitches in them from the tape recorder, or someone in the room was talking at the time, or there would be a little bit here and there that would give you problems in the recordings. And in some cases, they would record them and wouldn't record the opening theme music or the closing theme music, just because that tape was fairly expensive and they wanted to conserve it. Well, between the archived copies of the theme music and all of the different recordings, they can put them together and reconstruct quite good audio versions versions of all of the missing episodes.
And it's, I mean, it's fantastic work. I mean, talking about the missing episodes of Doctor Who, in a way, we're talking about the fans' story, or the fans' stories so many times, because the fans' work on producing these recordings is just fantastic. Doctor Who just generated this fan interest right from the very early stages. And as you say, people wanted to keep recordings from their televisions. And it was quite remarkable. You know, the people you've mentioned who we owe a lot to. And then there's this other chap, another fan called Mark Ayres, who has done a fantastic amount of work over the years. And he was another, I think, as a child, he was recording Doctor Who from the television. And I know he wasn't the only one to do this. I mean, I think we've all maybe have done this in the past where we've held a tape recorder or a microphone up to a television speaker. But Mark Ayres and some of the others were actually taking the back off their parents' television and wiring their tape recorders directly into the audio feed. And it's quite a scary prospect, really, to think of children dismantling these quite early television sets, which were not terribly safe objects, and wiring stuff into the speakers in order to get better quality recordings.
It's certainly quite something, the things that people were doing. And yes, wiring into the back of a television with a tape recorder is certainly a remarkable extent to go to.
Absolutely. And the other thing, of course, that Mark Ayres, I mean, he obviously took that and he's then gone on. He's got he's had a career in audio and in audio reconstruction work. And he's a technical wizard at cleaning up audio recordings, and he's taken many of these fan recordings over the years, and as Brian says, you know, he's managed to remove some of the extraneous noises and the pops and crackles and people's parents talking in the room while the television show was on, and he cleans all these up. And I think it's fair to say, if you've watched any 1960s Doctor Who on DVD, you've probably heard a Mark Ayres reconstruction, because most of the audio on those DVDs, I think, has been cleaned up by Mr. Ayres himself.
Yes, he has done a tremendous amount of work on that.
So there's the audio reconstructions from the BBC, which we mentioned, and then there's also visual reconstructions, which we're going to talk about in the next episode. We're going to go and talk on about some of the ways that visual reconstructions have been made and some of the techniques being used. So there's quite a bit yet to talk about with the missing episodes of Doctor Who.
And we'll tell you how you can get a hold of some of those visual reconstructions too. So we definitely have some really neat stuff to talk about next time. I think we're leaving the best till last.
Yeah, so stick with us for the next episode, and we'll tell you how you can get hold of some of this stuff at pretty minimal cost.
So, you can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. So, thanks for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
And yes, thanks very much. This is Eamon from England. Goodbye.